This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, covering lots of different things around the Umpqua Valley. Congress now in recess, giving us an opportunity to talk with 2nd District Congressman Cliff Bentz, although I didn't ask in the last couple of minutes, but I'm presuming you're probably somewhere around your home in Eastern Oregon this afternoon.
Yes, Kyle, and as usual, thank you for having me on your show. But yes, I'm in my house here outside of Ontario, about 10, 12 miles, and looking out at an incredibly smoky view, as has been the case for a couple of weeks now. And it's the good news is there's no wind. The bad news is there's no wind because the smoke just sits here. But at least for fire purposes, the wind is bad news. So having none is good. We are surrounded by fires here. Most of them are back under control, although the one that's running down into ran out of Oregon and over into Idaho, and now it's reached Nevada, almost 500,000 acres. Well, that's putting up an awful lot of smoke. And then we have other fires going in other places. The good news is they're making headway and getting them stopped. So that's good. But your question was, am I at my house? And the answer is yes.
Well, and your view there, you know, we have been spared a lot of smoke. We had some last week and probably up till about Saturday from some of the drift smoke coming into the area. But taking a look at some of the media pictures from other parts of Oregon, certainly reminds us of times, whether it's Archie Creek or others, where we have had, very high levels of smoke. And you think about, you know, what some of the implications that could be health-wise if you're breathing that in for very long, people that work outdoors, things like that. What's your reaction to all this? First of all, talk about the work going on with the firefighters.
Well, thank goodness we have them, and it's dangerous, hot, dirty work, and they deserve all the support we can give them. The challenge, of course, is which fire do you fight when you have so many going on at one time, and the prioritization that is used by the Forest Service and by the BLM, many times people are unhappy with it, but you can't run over and fight a fire which only involves, and I put this in quotes, range land when there's fire someplace else that's endangering people's homes and lives. And so it's very, very, very frustrating for a lot of people. And we don't blame the firefighters for it, but the poor people that are on the cutting edge of fire really challenging for them. And I'm sure it's the case over in the forested areas of my district, just like it is out here in where sagebrush and juniper trees prevail. But thank goodness we have, if not more people fighting fire on the BLM and Forest Service space than we had in the last couple of years. We certainly have just as many. And I actually went around to the various groups that were in charge of trying to keep us safe from fire before the fire season, interviewing them and asking them, do you need more equipment? Do you need more fuel? Do you need more people? And the answer was a uniform, we are ready. But man, I'm not sure they were ready for 40 fires at once.
Yeah, a lot going on. How do we get this fire situation under control?
Well, it's a great question. The truth of it is, in some of our spaces, fire is a kind of a natural thing, and by that I mean out here in the range areas, fire was natural for years, and that was one of the reasons we didn't have so much area covered with juniper trees, because fire kept those kinds of invasive things knocked back. But in the forest, the challenge now, given the increased rate of growth of plants in general because of the increased amount of CO2 in the air, you've got to have some way to remove the excess fuel from the forest. And I'm happy to say that I supported and almost, I came within five votes of getting this, my bill passed on biomass, clarification of the fact that we could take wood, waste wood off of federal forest land and use it for biomass purposes. I came within five votes of getting that made an amendment to the farm bill. It may have all been for the best, Kyle, because no one could believe how much support the bill got. But the idea is that we could qualify much more of this wood and woody material taken out when we thin trees or when we log and have residual sawdust and whatnot left over. We could take that and put it through the cellulosic conversion process and make it into jet fuel. And this is now finally a technology that does work. It needs to be done at scale, but it will ultimately, by virtue of the way the renewable fuel standard works, and by virtue of the value of jet fuel now that's made from cellulosic sources, this kind of thing is got real legs. And I'm happy to say that Senator Merkley agrees with my approach on this, and he's dropped a companion bill identical to my bill over in the Senate. And so we have some guarded optimism that perhaps we can generate a better ways of getting wood out of the forest, and also at the same time create new markets for wood. And make jobs and things available that has not been the case for the last 30 or 40 years.
Now, one of the other aspects of fire, and I'm curious about your perspective, especially in the area that you're in, but really for all of the second district as well. What about the impact of all the smoke on just regular agriculture that's trying to continue taking place?
Well, of course, it's horrific on grapes. Because it damages, so for vintners and wine-related activities, it's horrid. For other types of activities, well, let's say wheat or sugar beets or onions or things of that nature, it's not good, but it's not fatal. Alfalfa, for example, my farm, I've got 120 acres here, most of which I lease out to farmers, and they're raising alfalfa, which is a good thing because right now so much feed has been destroyed by fire that this alfalfa is going to be in huge demand. So my tenants will actually, I hope, make some money this year. But we are so fortunate here, Kyle. We actually still have water in our Owyhee Reservoir system, and many places across the state were not that lucky. But to your point about smoke, it's very damaging to people in general. Breathing this stuff is bad news, and what I've been trying to do is say to my environmental colleagues, for goodness sakes, why back in Congress, because the smoke made its way back to D.C., I think a lot of it's Canadian, but still, I would say to them, why aren't you supporting the Fix Our Forest Act, which is designed to try to get back into the woods and remove some of this fuel? And it's so disturbing to me that we don't see on the Democrat side support in the Senate for that act. We got it across the floor of the House, and with 40 Democrats voting for it, along with almost every Republican. I'll just say this smoke is bad for many, many reasons, but little kids and older people with asthma, I mean, it's bad news. And so, again, I'm hoping that my Democrat friends will step up and support the Fix Our Forest Act or other acts that would reduce fuel, be it out in the range areas or be it in forests.
Congressman Cliff Bence with us. Let's switch gears quite a ways here. the current war with Iran, where do things stand? What are your thoughts about what the next steps should be in this conflict in terms of the U.S. Action?
Well, let me say that I want to make it clear that high gas prices don't do anybody any good. And the real challenge right now is making sure that Iran understands that the blockade on stopping oil, their oil, from leaving their country is going to remain in place. And my guess is that they'll be tightening up the blockade on other things going in and out of Iran. That appears to be the most effective tool that remains available. I'll just say that it's no surprise that Iran doesn't have a military presence anymore, because it's been destroyed. It's, many of its abilities to reach out and damage other places has been at least severely curtailed, but still they still have the ability to harm their neighbors, obviously. But their economy is in a shambles, and I think the only way of eventually getting to a settlement is by tightening the screws on the blockade of stuff going in and out of Iran. And this is one of those things that started out with a focus on their nuclear ability. And when a country is focused on destroying the United States, and has been for many, many years, or at least severely damaging us, and of course Israel also, you don't want them to have a nuclear weapon, and that was the original concept. Now, of course, they have played their card, which is the same card they would have played 20 years ago, and that's why no one has pulled, taken them to task. And the card is to stop the flow of oil through the strait and of Hormuz. And so, of course, they're doing what a small country does, play the most significant leverage card that they've got. But again, I think in the long run, it's going to come down to the blockade.
It seems like we've gone back and forth. There's going to be an agreement. No, there's not. What's your assessment of how the Trump administration has handled this whole complex situation?
Well, it seems to me the president is allowing his optimism and hope that the situation would resolve, overcome the reality of facts on the ground. And I don't, Iran has 90 million people. It's not Venezuela. And so they're not stupid. And they understand the leverage that they enjoy right now, given the onset of the midterms. And they think that they can keep gas prices high. That will damage Republican chances of staying in power. And that's the card they're playing. I will just say it's really a good thing that the Trump administration and Trump 1 and certainly now in Trump 2 has done its very, very best to facilitate the increased production of fossil fuel, so that instead of seeing gasoline at $120 a barrel, we see it somewhere in the $83 a barrel. I think the exact price, one of my staff gave it to me, is $84.96 as of 9 a.m. this morning. It is running between $83 and $85, dramatically less than the $97 it was on July 4th. And again, it's because we are producing so much fuel here, and that we can thank the Trump administration for that.
Now, let's talk about the August recess just getting underway. What kinds of things are you going to be focusing on in your time back in Oregon?
Well, we're going to focus on fire, of course. We were just putting the calendar together this morning. We'll be going to Baker for fire meetings on Wednesday, the Grand for meetings on Thursday of this week. We'll be in Pendleton in all probability on the Friday of this week. Then we'll start over next week, and we'll probably be in Medford, Grants Pass, and Klamath Falls next week. And then we'll be back here in Ontario for meetings of the Eastern Oregon Economic Summit will be held this year in Ontario. So I'll be speaking at that, and then I'll be speaking at an energy conference in Boise on the 26th. And then I'll fly to Redmond and Prineville and Madras on the 27th and 28th. And then we'll be heading back to Washington, D.C. Early in September. The 3 weeks of Congress being back in D.C. are extraordinarily important, Kyle. This is this is the 3 weeks, frankly, before the election. And there's an awful lot of stuff that we have to be focusing on in that 3 weeks. And so I don't have the laundry list here in front of me, but I'll just tell you the Senate didn't make it any easier by failing to get to some of the more important items before they adjourned. But we in the House managed to pass what needed to be passed out. There's all kinds of bills sitting over there on the floor of the Senate. I don't know what those guys are doing, but they're having a real challenge. And I can't be too mean about it. They've got they've got on everything but reconciliation. The Republicans have to have about 7 Democrats join them. And if the Democrats don't want things to happen, well, guess what? They don't. And that's why things are kind of stalled out on the farm bill and other important legislation.
So how do you feel like the midterms are looking for the House when it comes to the GOP staying in control?
So it happened that the Speaker was Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was in Washington State and in Portland just 3 days ago, and I went over to meet with him and joined him over in Washington State, helping campaign for John Braun, a candidate there in the Vancouver area. And so I had occasion to listen to the Speaker address that exact issue. Where do we stand when it comes to holding power in the House? And he is extremely optimistic, as he has been for the last couple of years, that we will hold the Republican majority, as small as it is. And a bunch of the reason has to do with redistricting, but also it's not just the redistricting that just happened. It's the redistricting that's occurred both under Republican and Democrat administrations over the past 20 years. And what that means is, if you look at the Cook Political Report, which is viewed by most as the most rational and balanced analysis of where everybody is, this 435 seats in the House of Representatives, of all of those races, it will probably come down to about 18. 18 races will, in all probability, decide who's in charge of the House. And what that generally means is, and you can go look at those races on the Cook Political Report. There's a paywall on some of it, but not on some of the rest. But you can see that there's a number of those seats lean one way and a number of those seats lean the other. But it's extremely close. And what that generally means is it comes down to who raises the most money. And we have been raising an awful lot of money on the Republican side. And the Democrats, for their candidates, have been doing well, but they've been doing very, very poorly when it comes to raising money by their national party apparatus. And so I'll just say that the socialistic bent or drift or gallop or whatever you want to call it on the Democrat side is not helping them. And I think there are many, many people who are scared to death of AOC and others that think that the government taking over and owning the means of production make no sense at all. So we'll have to see what happens. But right now, the good news is I think we have a very, very decent chance of holding on to the majority in the House.
Now, both you and I think in the past, Congressman DeFazio have both kind of said the same thing in interviews with me, that there's a big difference, whatever side of the aisle you're on, that there's a big difference in what you can get done when your party's in control.
Oh my goodness, that is the understatement of the century. So I should know. I spent 12 years in Salem, not one day in the majority, not one day. And to say that it's difficult to get something done when you're in the minority is absolutely true. And now for the last 3 years, I've been in the majority, and I will just share with you that we have gotten all kinds of things done. And it doesn't hurt, of course, to have a Republican president, because President Trump's very, very, very helpful when it comes to who he has appointed to be the head of the Department of the Interior or the Department of Agriculture, which, of course, the BLM and USDA. And that kind of help in the agencies is unbelievably important. And that's why we have high hopes that we'll be able to address this fire situation and maybe start getting more of these logs out of the forest and not to mention just brush and overgrown parts of forests, so we can have less of these fires.
Talk about your take on the governor's race in Oregon. Not a federal thing, but back here in your home state, where do you see this race coming down?
Well, thank you for asking. I spoke with actually Christine Drazen called me a couple of days ago and just shared with me that polling shows that she's still up 4 or 5 points. It's still early in this race. I'll just tell you, Kyle. I made a list of 27 items. I'm staring at it right now, and the title on my list is 40 years of Democrats' rule has brought us to this. The first item is we are 49th in the nation when it comes to fourth grade math and reading performance. In business, we're 47th. Corporate tax competitiveness, we're 49th. Personal income tax rates were right at the top. Workers' unemployment benefits law, now some of the stuff that are done for public employees are just astounding when it comes to paying them to go out and recruit more members. The state regulatory burden, Oregon is the 7th worst in the nation. Productivity, we're 43rd out of 50th. I'm telling you, Kyle, if the people of the United States want to slip over toward a socialistic bent, Oregon's a great example of where it gets you. 40 years of this, and I could go on. I have 27 items here. Business closings. Oregon is 13th highest in the nation in business closings. The high cost of housing, we're 42nd when it comes to respect to housing affordability. Wildfire occurrence, we're one of the worst in the nation. Why would anybody, Governor Kotek can't run on this record. That's why she's trying to blame and say everything is about Trump. You would think that she's running against Trump when, in fact, she's running against Christine Drazen. It's astounding to watch. But my hope is that the people of Oregon will look at the record of the past 40 years and suddenly realize it's time for a change.
And as we wrap up, what's your take on maybe your top priority when you get back there in September?
So my top priority is this, they call it the Wildfire Market Act, but it's this bill that the biomass bill that I'm so hopeful that we'll be able to get it passed, and it will open up the door to more activity in removing waste wood from our federal forests and making people safer as we take and clean up and leave our big trees if people want to, but for goodness sakes, let's try to reduce the severity of these wildfires, and so I'm very, very hopeful about that. Of course, there are so many other things, but that's one of them.
All right, Congressman Cliff Bence, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Really appreciate it.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.